Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chandrika Vishadasmi Rai Saruna Panga Vikshitai Swakart Anam Ivaraja Sattva Bhyam Swastvi Palaka Chandrika Vishadasmi Rai Saruna Panga Vikshitai Swakartanami Vajrachat Sattvabhyam Swastvi Palaka Chandrika Vishadasmi Rai. By pure smiling, like the full increasing moonlight. Sa Aruna Apanga Vikshitai. By the clear glances of their reddish eyes. Swaka Artanam. Of the desires of his own devotees. Iva, just as. Rajak Sattvamyam. By the modes of passion and goodness. Swastri Palakaha. Were creators and protectors. Translation and purport. By his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. Purport. Those Vishnu forms blessed the devotees with their clear glances and smiles, which resembled the increasingly full light of the moon. Shriya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. As maintainers, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling. Their smiles resembled the mode of goodness, protecting all the desires of the devotees, and the glancing of their eyes resembled the mode of passion. Actually, in this verse, the word rajak means not passion, but affection. In the material world, rajoguna is passion, but in the spiritual world, it is affection. In the material world, affection is contaminated by rajoguna and tamoguna. But in the Shuddha Sattva, the affection that maintains the devotees is transcendental. The word Swakartanam refers to great devotees. As mentioned in this verse, the glance of Lord Vishnu creates the desires of the devotees. A pure devotee, however, has no desires. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of the devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glances creates variegated desires in relation to Krishna and devotional service. In the material world, desire is a product of rajoguna, and tamo guna. But desire in the spiritual world gives rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. Thus the word svakartanam refers to eagerness to serve Krishna. In Vrindavan, there is a place where there was no temple, but a devotee desired, let there be a temple and seva, devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of a devotee. Shukadeva Goswami is describing Krishna's leelas as he showed them on the earth. There is no difference between the eternal manifestation of Krishna and his pleasure pastimes in the kingdom of God, in the spiritual realm. No difference between that and what Krishna shows in this world. But there is a difference from our point of view. Our point of view is contaminated and limited. Our power to perceive and appreciate, to understand and be actually attracted to Krishna's leelas is defective. It's for the benefit of us, defective souls, that Krishna comes to this world, descends to this world as avatara, and displays within the material realm of time and space his eternal pastimes. Otherwise, there's no need for Krishna to enter the material world. But he does it for the benefit of the devotees of his who are residing in the material world. All living entities are actually his devotees. And Krishna wants to reclaim every one of them. All of the souls who have fallen into the material realm. And then those especially who are consciously endeavoring to recover their devotion to him, the sadhakas. For their benefit, especially, Krishna comes, Parichranaya Sadhunam, to save his devotees. Not so much to save them from enemies. There is no force that can destroy a devotee. There is no real enemy of a devotee. But they need to be saved from their ignorance, from their separation from Krishna. So Krishna comes and shows himself to deliver the sadhakas from their forgetfulness, to show himself and remind them what he is and how wonderful even his glances and his smile are. And for the pure devotees who have no material desires, Krishna most especially comes for their sake. Krishna will manifest for the sake of one pure devotee. As in the example of Prahlad, Nrisimhadeva appeared for the benefit of Prahlad. Lord Matsya appeared for the benefit of Satyavrata Muni. Even for one pure devotee, Krishna will take the trouble to make an avatar. They don't have any desires. Means they don't have any material agenda. They have no purpose to fulfill within the material realm. But for them, for the pure devotees, Krishna is showing what he actually is, and he's creating their spiritual desires. Analogy is given. Iva rajak satvabhyam. Not really modes of passion and ignorance. There is no mode of passion or mode of ignorance in the spiritual realm. But there are stimulus of desire, what we call udipana. What Krishna things that Krishna shows about himself, things that stimulate the desires of his devotees. So here, his smiles are like the mode of passion, creating the desires of his devotees, and his, or the other way around, the smiles are protecting, like the mode of goodness, maintaining their desires. Devotee has a more unfulfilled desire. There's danger he may lose that desire. He's been waiting for Krishna's reciprocation, maybe for lifetimes. And he may lose hope that it will ever be fulfilled. He might give up the desire to be with Krishna, to associate with him in a certain way. This is pure devotees we're talking about. Not mere sadhakas, but devotees who are, actually have solid attraction to Krishna, who are actually thinking primarily about Krishna's service. They may have a little bit of material concern, but their concerns are almost completely just Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's service. Whereas the sadhakas, the lower grade sadhakas, they're thinking a little bit about Krishna's pleasure and mostly about their material concerns. So when we graduate to the higher level, there may be a little bit of material anxiety, but mostly just concern for Krishna's satisfaction. So those devotees, they may become frustrated after many, many lifetimes of waiting for Krishna to reciprocate with them. They have an actual desire to have a particular association with Krishna, and it's not coming so easily. They're made to stay in the material world and to keep on practicing sadhana. They may be living in the holy abode, and still they don't see Krishna. They have not developed their deep personal relationship with Krishna, and they're getting maybe weary of waiting. So Krishna comes and smiles at them. He gives some, that can be taken figuratively, not necessarily literally a smile, but maybe Krishna does something to encourage them. Don't give up, keep on going. You know, I'm pleased with you. That's Krishna's smile. Krishna shows us something to indicate that he's pleased with our endeavors and that we should just keep on endeavoring. And that way Krishna preserves the desires of the devotees. Desire is there in the pure devotees, pure desire, spiritual desire. But Krishna encourages that and sustains that desire by little tokens of reciprocation. And in the first place, those desires needed to be created, or let's not even say created, because the sarupa of the living entity, his actual spiritual identity, is eternal. And that the foundation of our real identity is spiritual desire. If I'm in, let's just say for example, if a devotee is in Vatsalya Rasa, that Vatsalya Rasa is based on the desire to be Krishna's protector. That Stayi Bhava is there, the desire to protect Krishna. It's a desire, it's founded on desire. That desire is eternal. It doesn't have to be created. But it needs to be awakened. It may have been dormant for a long time. The devotee who's coming from the material world and recovering his spiritual life, his sarupa, his natural desires have to be awakened. First of all, remove all the material desires. That's the business of Vaidhi Sadhana, Anartha Nivritti. And then wipe out even the subtle traces of material desire. That is achieved by the time one reaches prema. But then, that real prema must be individualized. It can't just be generic. Attraction can be generic. I just am attracted to Krishna in general. But prema must be in a particular flavor. Pure love must be in an individualized particular flavor, a particular relationship with Krishna. It cannot just be general or neutral. Except for the Shanta Rasa. But in the higher rasas, there has to be an individual, personal relationship. Specific desires. to serve Krishna in a specific way. So they don't need to be created, they're eternal in the soul, but they need to be awakened. So that Krishna's sidelong glance represents the stimulus that Krishna gives to awaken the dormant desires in the heart. That is only for those who have already given up all their material desires. But that's what Shukadeva is talking about here. Krishna's reciprocation with his pure devotees. It's something that we're not ready to imitate, we're not ready to actually do yet, but this is the prayojana. The goal of the practice of devotional service is to receive Krishna's sidelong glance that awakens the desire, the pure desires in our heart, and also his smile that maintains, sustains those desires. Once we reach that stage, there's no turning back. Then we're functioning impelled by the pure spiritual energy. That shift from spiritual to material to spiritual rather, that begins at the very start of devotional service for the raw neophyte. He's beginning to undergo the transformation of living, instead of under the domain of the material energy, he is transferring gradually to the domain of the spiritual energy, even from the very beginning. And that basically is what the process of devotional service is for, to effect that transfer. Prabhupada talks in the end of the purport about establishing a temple in Vrindavan. What did he establish it for? Okay, Prabhupada had a desire. But what was actually behind that desire? Why did Prabhupada want that in the jungle of Ramanreti? I even saw it in 1975 when the temple was opened, that the place was, yes, it was on the outskirts of the city. It was there were no one or two houses in the vicinity, and it was practically a wild area outside of town. It isn't anymore, but even 1975 it was. Why did Prabhupada want to make a temple there? There already were thousands of temples in Vrindavan. And some of them were still functioning, still attracting pilgrims and devotees. Why another temple? Prabhupada had his reasons. He wanted to have a place where his international disciples could go and stay in Vrindavan, a place where they would be in an atmosphere of pure Krishna consciousness, and where they would study Krishna consciousness very deeply in the place of Rupa and Jiva Goswami, and a place where all the pilgrims to Vrindavan would come and see what ISKCON is. How we are actually practicing pure devotional service on the highest level. That's what Prabhupada wanted. If we're not living up to that standard, we should correct it. That's what this temple in Vrindavan was meant to be. That was Prabhupada's desire. To create the atmosphere and the stimuluses to awaken and fortify the spiritual desires and spiritual intentions of his followers, and to impress the rest of the world, those who would come and see the place, giving them an impression of what pure Krishna consciousness is. Prabhupada said that his temples, the ISKCON temples, are embassies of the spiritual world. That means an interface, a place where the spiritual and material come together. This is required, because how are we going to enter the spiritual realm unless we have some entryway? There's no need for the material, spiritual world to come down to the material world. Krishna and his devotees in the spiritual world don't need to come down here for anything. It's for our benefit, to give us access to rise up to their level. To enter into the spiritual world comes to us. It comes in the form of the holy Dham, and the ashrams established by the great acharyas in those dhams. And also here in the Srimad Bhagavatam is being recorded how Krishna brings his pastimes down to the material world in his avatar. It's necessary to give access to the devotees so they can enter the spiritual world. The spiritual world has to come down to them. As another example of the deity, Archa Avatar, Krishna appears in the material form, an apparently material form, because otherwise the materialistic devotees have no access. They cannot understand the form of God, they cannot imagine it properly. So Krishna comes and shows himself in the form of the deity, Murti. Similarly, Krishna shows his activities in his manifest leelas that he displays in his avatars. So, it's a complex situation where the spiritual is meeting the material. Although the spiritual, there is no rajas and tamas in the spiritual realm. When you bring the spiritual world before the eyes of contaminated materialistic living entities, then things get complicated. Because even though there is no rajas and tamas in Krishna's lila, there's rajas and tamas in the eyes and the hearts of the conditioned souls who are now witnessing those pastimes. And so they see through the filter of their own rajas and tamas. So therefore, as if creating a desire by rajas and tamas. Because if a person who is not a pure devotee reads about, hears about these pastimes, he may misunderstand. And sometimes these pastimes are projected onto the material modes. We see recordings of different versions in other Puranas. Some of the Rajasic Puranas describe Krishna's pastimes in a different way. There's more sex, more violence, and more rajas in the form of Krishna's pastimes as described in Puranas like the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. This is Krishna's pastimes being seen through passionate eyes. Actually, the pastimes themselves are pure, but the person who's seeing them, even the person who's recording them, may be seeing through a filter. And Krishna shows himself in that form. Nigamakalpataro, the Vedas will reciprocate in whatever way we want them to. If we want the Vedas to give us material benefits to elevate us to heaven, the Vedas will teach us sacrifices, karmakanda sacrifices for going to heaven or achieving other material purposes. So the Vedas seem material because materialistic persons are approaching them. And similarly, Krishna's leelas can seem material when they're being perceived through the eyes of materialistic persons. Therefore, if we want to get access to Krishna's pastimes in their original form, undistorted, we have to hear about them and see them through the eyes of pure, unalloyed devotees. If we hear the pastimes of Krishna described by materialistic people, we will get a distorted presentation, and our understanding will be distorted. These popular presentations of Krishna Lila, professional recitations of Bhagavad Saptaha, and so on, are distorting the message of Krishna. They're not presenting pure Krishna consciousness because the people who are presenting them are not pure. We should want to hear from Shukadeva Goswami as he actually presents these leelas in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we should want to hear them explained by those who are faithful followers of the principles of Sri Shukadeva Goswami, of the pure devotion that Shukadeva Goswami embodied and taught. For us, that means to remain within the sampradaya established by Srila Prabhupada and his predecessors. The Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya, strictly following in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Srila Prabhupada. Not that this is the only pure line, but this is the line that gave us our spiritual life. And we are obliged, morally, even though there's no law, is not even a law of karma. We can leave ISKCON and not go to hell. We've seen devotees who have done that, who've left ISKCON and they're still going on with the spiritual life. So we're not going to threaten you that you're going to, you know, burn in hell forever if you leave ISKCON. But there's a moral obligation we have, even if there's no legal obligation, or even karmic obligation. You know, Krishna is very merciful. Prabhupada is very merciful. Prabhupada will continue to shine his mercy even on those who abandon his institution. But we have a moral responsibility not to abandon it. We have a debt of gratitude. By remaining under the shelter of those who are faithfully representing Srila Sukadeva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, who has given us Sukadeva Goswami's protection, by remaining under their protection, we can safeguard ourselves from seeing Krishna and his pastimes through distorted eyes. We want to keep our vision pure, undistorted, unmotivated by material desires. Only that way can we understand Krishna and his activities as they actually are. If we have material motives, if we are tainted by anger, by material ambition, or any other distortion, then we won't understand Krishna properly. We'll make Krishna into something that suits our purposes. But we want to make Krishna to make us into something that suits his purposes. For that, we have to maintain a pure vision. And for that, we have to stay desperately hanging on to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Only because we're following him and listening to him and doing what he says, do we have clear vision. Is our intelligence undistorted to the extent it is? If we have any undistorted good sense, it's because we're listening to Prabhupada and doing what he says. And we have to continue doing that in order to maintain this clear vision and be able to realize Krishna properly through undistorted eyes and realize pure devotional service to Krishna the way Sukadeva Goswami presented it. Any questions or comments?
There seems a common quality of Prabhupada was compassion.
Yes.
So that's part of the devotee's desire to save the world. So can you maybe elaborate on the importance of compassion, the importance of developing it?
I had any idea what compassion was about. Well, it's very important, especially since we have to live with one another, and we have to live in this material world. We're not hermits. We're not practicing. We don't have the luxury of practicing devotional service all by ourselves, each in our bhajan kutir. We have to live with one another, and we have to deal with the rest of the people in the world to some extent. For that, we need compassion. Well, let's say compassion and tolerance, forgiveness. If we don't have those qualities, then we're not going to be able to live with our God brothers, and we're not certainly not going to be able to live with the non-devotees or deal with them. We'll just become intolerant, frustrated, and angry. So that compassion and the tolerance that goes along with it are required just to follow, to be able to function within this context of a communal, you know, institution. It would be easier if we all just had our individual apartments in Radhakund, our little bhajan kutirs, and we could do our own thing. And many devotees go that path. That's easier. But it's hard to work and live together and to try to save the world. The world doesn't want to be saved. And we have to try to save it.
So,
well, that's bad. You know, if we don't want to save it, who's going to want to save it? Who's going to care? If we don't care, then that's it. Nobody's going to care. We're getting the inspiration from Srila Prabhupada. He's showering that compassion on us and you know, and infecting us with that compassion. If we refuse to reciprocate, you know, just say, I don't want this compassion, I don't feel compassion, I don't, forget it. Yeah, and we don't get inspired by Srila Prabhupada's compassion, then who is? Who's going to do it then? So we're stuck. We're stuck. We have the responsibility to be compassionate. Because if we don't, nobody's going to be it.
I'm sorry. Okay. I agree with who had his hand first. Go ahead.
Yes, it is compassion. If he doesn't feel compassion, then he can't deliver them. He can collect followers and money, become famous and powerful, but he's not going to bring anybody back to Godhead if he doesn't have a pure heart. If he instead of, because what is motivating him? If it's not compassion that's motivating him, then it must be desire for prestige, for power, for influence, for money. You got to be motivated by something. It takes a lot of energy to sit and speak a Bhagavatam class. Especially if you're going to do a Bhagavat Saptaha, that's quite, you know, an expenditure of energy. So why would you do it unless you had a motivation? And if your motivation isn't compassion, it must be something material. And if you have if you're exploiting the Bhagavatam for your material purposes, there's some good of it. There's some good in it. Any recitation of Bhagavatam is beneficial. But don't expect to give anybody pure Krishna, pure devote love of God if your desires are not pure. If you don't have a pure heart, you're not going to be able to really save anybody. You won't be able to make anybody into a pure devotee if you're not a pure devotee. So your Bhagavat recital will achieve some good, but not anything near what it could achieve if you had a pure heart. Sukadeva Goswami was inspired by Krishna directly. But he's an exception. He didn't take initiation, even from his father. But nobody can imitate that. The normal process is to get Krishna's mercy, the mercy of Krishna's compassion from Krishna's devotee, from the guru. Sukadeva Goswami didn't have an initiating guru, but he's the one exception. Even Krishna had a guru. So the rest of us, we have to get the compassion of Krishna through our spiritual masters. They're showering down the rain of mercy. Samsara dava nalavira loka karunya, was it? Tranaya, karunya, ganaganadva. They're ganagana. Ganagana is a cloud. Cloud of mercy, rain cloud of mercy. Showering down that mercy on the conditioned souls. Those are the pure Vaishnavas. We have to get that mercy from the pure devotees. We can't imitate Sukadeva Goswami and try to get it directly from Krishna. Okay. Yes, if he's following the footsteps, if a preacher is following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, but not just superficially. If he's preaching for his own aggrandizement, for his own name and fame, and to have money in his pocket and disciples, if that's his motivation, then he's not really following in Prabhupada's footsteps. That wasn't Prabhupada's motivation. to get money, to get followers, to get fame. Prabhupada didn't call this movement the Bhaktivedanta Swami Society. He called it, he didn't advertise himself, he advertised Krishna. So if you're advertising yourself, then your motive isn't pure. And that's not following. You want to follow Prabhupada's footsteps, then don't advertise yourself, advertise Krishna.
Okay?
I'm sorry. Hold on, none of them. Yes. Yes. Okay, so then the question is, even Jiva, yes? Yes. Yes. Okay, this is a tough question. I don't, you know, it's hard to satisfy everybody with an answer. Well, it comes down to the living entity in Vaikuntha. Does he have the tendency to enjoy separately from Krishna? You know, because on one hand, Prabhupada says we were with Krishna and we came to this world. On the other hand, we hear statements that nobody falls down from Vaikuntha. How can somebody have material desires in Vaikuntha? It's the nature, my understanding, you know, take it or leave it, but my understanding is that living entity means autonomous, that Krishna gives us the choice to stay submissive to him or to rebel, to let him be the controller and enjoyer, or to choose that we can try ourselves to be the controller and enjoyer. Living entity means you always have that choice. If you don't have that choice, you're not a jiva. That's what it means to be a jiva, to be marginal, that you can go either way, spiritual or material. If you have no choice but to be spiritual, then you're not a jiva. But if you have an opportunity to go become material, to join the material side, then that's marginal, tatastha shakti. So even in Vaikuntha, in any condition, a living entity has the potential to make the wrong choice, and therefore to fall down, to be expelled from Vaikuntha. Whether a person will exercise it, but he has the potential. I have the potential to go run out in the street and stand in front of a big truck, a bus, and get run over. I can do that. Nothing, you know, I can do that anytime I want. I got two legs. I can run out in the street and stand in front of a bus and get run over. But I never did it, and I hope I never will. I hope I'm not so stupid. You know, even if I have to kill myself, there are other ways to do it. Yeah. So potential is there. It doesn't mean that it's exercised. Apparently somebody did it because we're here in the material world. That's my understanding. I mean, we can have further arguments about it and go on for days, forever, but that's my understanding. Yes.
Prabhupada was asked once by disciples about the possibility of Jesus coming back from the spiritual ritual after once it went back there.
Yes. Second, it fall down a second time.
Yeah, Krishna states
Yadagatvada Nivartate.
He never come back, he says it repeatedly.
Yes.
chance is there.
Suppose you jump off the top of the Empire State Building. They don't let you do it anymore. They're big fences. But it used to be every year two or three people would jump off the top of the Empire State Building. Almost all of them got killed. Suppose you jump off, because, you know, how can you survive? But suppose you jump off and you fall on the canopy of the 50th floor and you're saved. You survive. What's the chances you're going to be so stupid to try it again? You know, you experienced near death, you know, almost certain death, and you were saved. Are you going to do it again? There's no history. There's history, you know, statistics. Every year, three people jumped off the building. But no record of anybody jumping off twice. So theoretically, it could happen, but it never did. They never fall from their position. We can fall. That's what it means to be a jiva. We can fall. That means we can switch from material to some spiritual to material. That can happen. There are people in other Vaishnav communities who have a different opinion. You know, many of the Babaji's have this other opinion.
But if you follow Prabhupada's teaching, it's clear what's his opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not very attracted to this other idea, even though I can't give a proof. You know, I can't give a proof that we fell from Vaikuntha. You know, I can't convince everybody, but I'm convinced. I mean, for 25 years of my devotional life, we didn't know any alternative to that, and so I'm not impressed by this alternate view. Yeah, I can't believe that's what Prabhupada taught. No way you can convince me. But unfortunately, I don't have the strength to prove it. Yes. Right. Right. You can make the sarupa, or somebody can make it for you and sell it to you. Can't change it. And the other thing is, if we didn't choose to fall down, then it's not our fault. It's Krishna's fault. And we have no reason to feel sorry. Well, no remorse. We don't have to feel guilty for falling down. Krishna made us fall down. He created us like that in the beginning. It's his fault. So if he wants to save me, let him save me. Why should I make any endeavor? Not my fault. You get ideas like that. Yes, there's no need to preach, there's no need to surrender. Krishna can save me, he may got me in this mess, he can get me out. Yeah. Krishna should, get his act together. I didn't do anything wrong. So there's no need to surrender, there's no need to preach, if that's really your attitude. That you Krishna created you like this, in this fallen condition.
Prabhupada told many places bought things that before and we didn't want. But they are taking more Bhaktivinoda Thakur view. Like at least what they are presenting.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur's view? Which is which?
You know, like he explained that either we are coming from Mahavishnu, I don't know.
No, 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 that's a misunderstanding of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching. No, 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 but that's not, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not talking about the original fall down, he's talking about something else when he talks about that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur does say that if you speculate on this question, that you're going to get yourself in serious trouble. And we should not speculate on it, we should not try to guess where we came from or how we fell down. We shouldn't even wonder about it because it's beyond our understanding. That's what he says. Okay.
Actually, I remember in one report, Prabhupada explained the fall of the soul, like we would be using on the planet, that somehow our day has fallen. And then he commented, this is the best explanation.
Okay. Best explanation.
Like, this is the best explanation. I remember it struck me, I had to find it.
Okay, please, yeah, find it first, please. Bhagavad Gita, and then Palabhananda, and then Madhumaran.
Somehow or other, we have fell down from Vaikuntha.
Somehow or other. But we fell down from Vaikuntha. Didn't Prabhupada say that? He said it. So that's good enough for me. Someone else denies it, okay, but Prabhupada said it, so I'll accept it.
Just like a kid, in the beginning he doesn't know that the fire is hot, so he wants to touch it. But as soon as one knows that the fire, if I touch fire, I will get burned, no more. And it's like that, before at some point.
Yes.
So one will fall down, and that back one, and he will then one fall down again.
Yes. Sure. Sounds simple to me. One last comment from Palananda Group. There is a... Okay. I don't know. I can't, you know, I can't comment on that. I don't know. It's beyond my understanding. You know, that, okay, if he says that, yeah. But that is there's a special province of Vaikuntha that we fell down from. No, well, anyway, that's like Jaya and Vijaya. We're at the gate of Vaikuntha, not inside. Something like that.
The same village, the same province.
The village of the fallen souls. No, but anyway, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that, so I can't really say. And last. Fell away from our Sarupa. Okay, well this is a more basic argument, whether we have a Sarupa that's eternal and forget it. The question about where we were and when we were, that's more messy. Yes. Yes. Sure. Yes, it's coming from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, whom we all accept as perfect authority. No. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.